opening narration.
Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome back. Today we're doing a deep dive into a truly iconic figure, Looking at Cher, the memoir, part one.
Yeah, and this isn't, you know, just your standard celebrity tell-all.
Not at all. No. It really digs into resilience, what she calls radical self-creation, just the incredible will it takes to carve out your own identity.
Right. And this first part takes us from her, well, pretty chaotic childhood, right up to winning the Oscar for Moonstruck. So her first 40 years, basically.
It feels like perfect timing for this memoir, too.
I think so. You know, we live in this age of super curated online lives, right? And people seem hungry for stories that are, well, more authentic, more about real struggle and courage.
This is Cher really taking control of her own story.
Exactly. Pulling back the curtain on the legend, you know.
Yeah.
Showing the vulnerable but really determined woman underneath all the glitz.
The chronological journey.
Yeah.
The formative years.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Before Cher the icon, there was Sherilyn Sarkisian.
Right. Growing up in places like El Centro, California, she talks about this dusty, sun-bleached poverty, just constant instability.
And her mother, Georgia Holt, is such a huge figure in the book.
Oh, absolutely. Radiant, ambitious, a survivor, married 8 times. Georgia was kind of Cher's first glimpse of how to navigate a tough world.
But that instability must have left a mark.
A huge mark. Georgia struggled. I mean, really struggled. Sometimes Cher and her sister were even briefly in an orphanage.
Wow.
And that, the memoir makes clear, created this deep, deep fear of poverty in Cher. A terror, really.
Which explains a lot about her drive later on.
Totally. It fueled this relentless work ethic. And then there's her father, John Sarkisian. Mostly absent, dealing with gambling, heroin addiction.
Yeah, she connects that absence to later relationships, right? Seeking older, protective men.
Exactly. And young Sherilyn herself was, well, painfully shy.
Felt like an outsider. Different looks, the dark Armenian features.
And undiagnosed dyslexia. School sounds like it was just awful for her. A daily humiliation, she calls it.
So she escaped into movies.
Yeah, the local cinema was her sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Loved Audrey Hepburn.
And that amazing quote, "Fame wasn't the goal. Fame was the way out."
It just reframes everything, doesn't it? It wasn't about glamour. It was about survival, security, finding a place to belong, the rise and the struggle.
Which kind of explains her next move, 16 years old.
Uh-huh. Drops out of high school, heads to L.A.
With basically nothing but ambition. She talks about how thrilling but also terrifying that was, being totally alone.
And then comes this huge turning point. Meeting Sonny Bono.
Right, in a coffee shop. 1962, she's 16, he's 27.
And it wasn't instant romance, according to her. More like finding safety, a port in a storm.
But he quickly became more than that.
Oh, way more. Protector, mentor, husband, creative partner. He filled all these roles.
Even though she had this amazing voice, she was scared to sing lead.
Crippling stage fright, yeah. Sonny really pushed her. And then, boom, I got you, babe, what? In 65.
Instant fame, the look, the sound. They were huge.
But underneath that whole folk rock love story vibe, Sonny controlled everything.
Everything. Like finances, music.
Pretty much. The music, the money, career decisions. She was young, trusting, signed contracts without even reading them.
That's incredible. Was that sort of control common back then for young female artists?
Unfortunately, yeah. It was pretty common for women to hand over a lot of control to male partners or managers. But with Cher, it was maybe amplified.
How so?
Well, her age, her shyness, that deep emotional reliance. Sonny wasn't just a manager. He was like her whole world. He filled that gap left by her father. The memoir really highlights how total that control felt.
Which makes her breaking away later even more significant.
Absolutely monumental.
So their pop fame starts to fade a bit, and Sonny pivots to TV.
Masterful move. The Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour, 1971. Saved their careers, made them even bigger stars.
And she loved the work, right? The comedy, the costumes, Bob Mackie.
Oh, yeah, she loved that part. But behind the scenes, the marriage was falling apart.
So the on-screen banter was just an act.
It became this painful parody, yeah. Totally disconnected from their real life, which was crumbling.
Was there a moment where she started pushing back?
Definitely. A key moment, she highlights, is insisting on her own solo spot on the show, her own singing spot.
Ah, okay.
It wasn't just about screen time. It was like this act of defiance. The first real crack in that Sonny and Cher image.
Starting to carve out her own space.
Exactly. Beginning to find her voice separate from the duo, peak achievements, and legacy. part one climax.
Okay, so this leads us into maybe the toughest part of the book emotionally.
Yeah, the breakup.
Yeah.
Leaving Sonny in 1974. Public, painful.
And it wasn't just one thing, was it? More like this deep need to grow.
Yeah.
To find out who she was without him.
Absolutely. And the legal battle afterwards was brutal.
She discovered she was entitled to almost nothing.
Shockingly little under California law back then of this whole empire they'd built. So the fight wasn't just about money. It was custody of Chaz. It was everything.
A real trial by fire.
Totally. She describes it as harrowing, betrayal, but also sheer determination. It forced her to become this savvy, self-reliant businesswoman. She had to.
So post-Sonny, life gets complicated again.
Oh, yeah. Solo career time. Liberating, but also terrifying, she says. Her own TV show share. Disco hits like Take Me Home.
And then the marriage to Greg Allman.
Whirlwind. Passionate. But doomed, really.
Mm.
His heroin addiction was a huge struggle for both of them. They had Elijah Blue together.
Her music career cooled off a bit towards the end of the 70s.
It did. But for Cher, that wasn't an ending. It was like, okay, what's next?
The push towards acting.
Which seemed crazy to a lot of people.
Hollywood just didn't see her that way, did they?
Not at all. TV personality, fashion icon?
Yeah.
Sure. But a serious actress. She faced, like, universal ridicule. She had to fight so hard against that perception.
But Robert Altman saw something.
He did. Cast her on Broadway. Come back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean. Terrifying for her, live theater.
But she got good reviews. Validation.
Huge validation. And then that lovely story about Meryl Streep during Silkwood.
Oh, yeah, the phone call.
Streep just being kind, you know, saying, I'm glad you're here, we'll have fun. Gave Cher the confidence boost she needed.
Which led to her first Oscar nomination.
Exactly. And the climax of this whole first part of the memoir has to be the Moonstruck Oscar win. 1988, Best Actress.
Such a moment.
And it felt like more than just an award for one movie, you know? It was validation for everything. For the dyslexic kid, the pop star told she couldn't act. The woman who fought tooth and nail to build her own life.
Yeah. The book ends right there on that huge high note.
Core philosophy and values.
So if you had to boil down Cher's philosophy based on this book, what would it be?
I think radical self-creation really nails it. She just doesn't seem to believe in fate. She believes in will. Your will to shape your life.
Right. Identity isn't fixed. It's something you constantly have to reinvent to survive, really.
Exactly. And that famous line to her mother, Georgia tells her to settle down, marry a rich man.
And Cher says, Mom, I am a rich man.
Iconic. It's not just about wealth. It's about being the source of your own power, your own security.
What seems to drive her most?
It feels like this powerful mix of fear and defiance.
Fear from the childhood poverty.
Yeah, that terror of being powerless, irrelevant. It fuels that incredible work ethic. But then there's the defiance.
Pushing back against anyone who tried to limit her.
Everyone. Teachers, yeah. Record execs, Sonny, Hollywood, anyone who said you can't. Maybe deep down, she was always trying to prove things to that insecure girl she used to be.
Three pivotal turning points.
Looking back at this first half of her life, what were maybe the three biggest turning points that really changed everything for her?
Okay, well, first has to be meeting Sonny, right?
Yeah, the port in a storm.
Absolutely. She's 16, alone in LA. He provides safety, mentorship, a path into the industry. He completely shapes her early life and career. Without Sonny, her trajectory would likely have been totally different. It set everything in motion for better and eventually for worse in terms of control.
Okay, so meeting Sonny is number one. What's next?
I'd say deciding to leave Sonny in 1974, that was huge.
Breaking away from that complete control.
Exactly. It wasn't just ending a marriage. It was ending this all-encompassing professional and personal partnership where he held most of the power. It forced her into that brutal legal fight, yes. But it also forced her to finally take full control of her career, her finances, her identity. It was the moment Sherilyn truly started becoming Cher. The independent entity.
A painful but necessary break. Okay, number three.
For me, it's the pivot to serious acting, specifically getting that break with Robert Altman on Broadway.
Come back to the Five and Dime.
Right. Because her music career was cooling, she was kind of at a crossroads, Hollywood was mocking her acting ambitions. This was her deliberately choosing a terrifyingly different path, proving everyone wrong, and ultimately finding a whole new dimension to her career that led all the way to the Oscar. It was a massive gamble that paid off spectacularly.
Human lessons and reflection.
When you read about her life, what are the big human lessons that jump out? Things we can all kind of relate to?
Well, the big one is reinvention is survival, isn't it? She just never let her past or other people's expectations define what she could do next.
Yeah, you don't have to be stuck in one chapter.
Exactly. And then the power of financial independence, especially for women back then, but still relevant today. That fight she had after leaving Sunny. It teaches you that having your own resources is freedom.
Mm.
Real freedom.
That's a huge one. What else?
Authenticity. You know, she was always unapologetically herself, even when it wasn't popular. And that's magnetic. People connect with that realness, I think. It's why she's endured.
And the book doesn't shy away from vulnerability either.
Not at all. It shows that vulnerability isn't weakness. Some of her biggest leaps, like going into acting, came from places of insecurity. But she used that energy to propel herself forward.
Right. It's candid about failures, mistakes, and relationships.
But they're never the end of the story for her. They're always just the setup for the next reinvention, the fuel.
It's quite a contrast to today's carefully polished images.
Totally. Her story is messy, complicated, and brilliantly real. A long life lived out loud. It's kind of an antidote to all that curated perfection we see online.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, so if we had to distill this first part of her incredible journey down to three key takeaways for our listeners, what would they be? Let's start with an emotional insight.
Emotionally, I think it's that vulnerability can be the birthplace of courage. Her fear, her shyness, her insecurities, they didn't paralyze her. They often became the very things that pushed her to make her boldest moves, from leaving home to demanding that solo spot to stepping onto a Broadway stage.
That's powerful. Okay, what about an intellectual insight? Yeah. Something about her ideas or approach?
Intellectually, it's the concept of identity as an ongoing act of creation, not a fixed state. She fundamentally rejects the idea that you are defined by your past or by others' labels. Her life is a testament to the power of will in actively reinventing who you are again and again.
Love that. And finally, a universal insight, a practical life lesson.
Universally, I think it's that facing adversity head on, even publicly, builds resilience. She didn't hide her struggles, the divorce, the career slumps, the ridicule. She confronted them, often using her unique style and wit, and turned potential defeats into moments of defiance and strength. Don't retreat, confront.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.